You're listening to the Belfer Center's Office Hours. Watch highlights from this and other Office Hours interviews on YouTube at youtube.com/Belfer Center. In this episode, we sat down with Ban Ki-moon, the 8th Secretary General of the United Nations, serving from 2007 to 2016. Prior to that, he was the Minister of Foreign Affairs and Trade for South Korea. He earned his Master's of Public Administration degree here at the Kennedy School of Government in 1985.
Secretary General Ban, thank you so much for joining us. It's a pleasure to have you on the show.
It's a great pleasure to see you. Thank you for this opportunity.
I want to start off and talk a little bit about some of the hotspots that are the current crises in the world. Let's start off with North Korea. The South Korean president, who was just elected earlier this year, has encouraged an opening, a meeting almost, more conversation and transparency with the North Korean regime, which is something that hasn't always been the case. Is that something that you support, and how do you see that conflict being resolved?
I think that he has been saying in a matter of principle, the best way of resolving any conflict issues is try to resolve through dialogue. Between the South and North, this crisis has been there since the last 70 years, and there have been many dialogue opportunities, and there have been many tensions. Never in the past has the level of tension been so high since the end of Korean War. Therefore, it will be crucially important to reduce, first of all, level of tension and make sure that North Korea abides by and fully implement all Security Council resolutions.
How do we get them to do that?
There are many ways, maximum pressure and
force
engagement. I would reject any such kind of forceful means. Now, what the American administration and most of the countries, including Korea, believe that at this time there should be a maximum pressure so that North Korea will have to abide by all relevant Security Council resolutions. But that may not mean all. Therefore, we try to find out a certain momentum or clues so that we can engage North Korea in dialogue. But before that, it is important that North Korea make sure that they will abide by all these existing obligations.
Does that mean using China's relationship and leveraging that? I mean, they, from what I understand, China's North Korea's greatest power ally, responsible for its connection to the internet and other sorts of goods that actually get to North Korea. Do you see China as the key here, or are there other ways do you think that would be helpful?
Definitely, China can play a very important role. China may be one of the keys in making sure that North Korea abides by with all relevant Security Council resolutions. If you consider the 90% of North Korean total foreign trade, import and export, is with China. And therefore, we can easily assume that China has a very important role to play. I believe that after a summit meeting between President Xi Jinping and President Trump, China has been exerting much more efforts than any time in the past. And that's why North Korea has begun criticizing China by name. In the past, even though when North Korea was not satisfied with what Chinese government had been doing, they have indirectly criticized North Korea, calling them as a neighboring countries, etc. But these days, they have criticized by name, that means China is now doing something.
What about Russia? Does Russia concern you right now? You know, in its affecting media around the world, it's, the Ukraine situation, the crisis in the Baltic region, Syria. Does it concern you?
We have been urging Russian authorities to play a constructive role. We have seen many such cases when Russian delegations has been vetoing the very crucially important resolutions put forward by the members of the Security Council, including the United States, this has been a source of frustrations and concern that the unity has often been broken. I have been urging the members of the Security Council that when United Nations is united, we can deliver a lot. When United Nations is not united, that's only the people in the conflict zone, they will have to suffer. Therefore, at this time, we sincerely hope that Russian Federation will play much more constructive role.
But what if it doesn't? I mean, how do we get them to actually do that? I mean, if it's in their interest, if they see it as in their interest to play these games, how do we get them to play nice, play fair?
That's not what the former Secretary General has to make any comment on this. There are still very important players like the United States, UK, and France who are veto power countries, and China also can play a very important role. So let the members of the Security Council be united for the benefits of resolving all these conflict issues like in Syria, which has been there longer than 6 years now. During those 6 years, more than 5 million people had to flee their countries, and more than half a million people have been killed, and 50-60% of their infrastructures, schools, hospitals, all have been destroyed. Yeah.
You know, over the last 10 years, Secretary General, what was the thing that you feared the most? Was there something that you saw as the greatest threat to society?
The greatest threat to international community is the division among the member states. Because of the division among member states, particularly key states, we have seen many conflicts have not been resolved. And not only these key states, the regional powers, for example, in the Middle East, Africa, they have been divided on most cases. Therefore, I have been urging when in office that the leaders, global or regional, they have to show their global vision for the benefit and interest of the people of the region and the world.
I mean, how do you see this being resolved? Do you see it turning into a war, a great power war? Do you see it being able to be resolved? I mean, you mentioned the Korean crisis was the worst we've seen in 60 years. There's a huge refugee crisis, of course, in Syria. There's all this suffering in the world. There's massive division in the United States. There's populism on the rise and on the spread in Europe and in the United States, of course, and nationalism, protectionism around the world. How can one have optimism?
With the transformative development of communication and transportation, this world has become a very small world. We are part of one family, global family. But unfortunately, we have seen increasing tendency of nationalism based on the different of thinkings and faith, religions, or circumstances where these people have been forced to live with that. Therefore, I have been really urging the world leaders to show a compassionate leadership instead of pursuing their very narrow and short-sighted national interests.
So it's got to be an attitude change. It has to be a broad, sweeping cultural change that
that's right
over and over is over a long period of time. I assume not something that can happen in a year. It's because it's taken a lot to get to this point. I imagine it will take a lot to get away from it.
Depending upon how we can see the issues, I think the situations in Syria or Ukraine or some in other parts of the world could have been resolved much, much faster without causing all these negative, tragic consequences where many people have been either killed or refugeed. Again, this world is unprecedentedly full of crisis. A lot of fires are burning at this time. That has been most agonizing and tragic period for me as a Secretary General of the United Nations. Now, with all this nationalism or just discriminating people who have no other place to rely on, we have to show compassion and the humanitarian support. There are many people who really need urgently the life-saving support. But as number of refugees and people who need our support, the lesser humanitarian support are coming. That is one of the very difficult situation for the United Nations to deal with this.
Moving on to climate change. Climate change was something that was a crowning achievement of your administration, your secretary generalship of the United Nations. It was a landmark deal. However, of course, recently, earlier this year, Trump had announced that he would be pulling out of the Paris Climate Agreement. What does that mean? And what does the world need to do?
As a former Secretary General and as a person who has been exerting all my efforts and energy in making sure that this climate phenomenon must be controlled by our common efforts, I am deeply disappointed and concerned by what President Trump of the United States has said. This decision, to my mind, is based on a very narrow and short-sighted vision. It does not based neither on science nor on economic situations. United States, as number two greenhouse gas emitting countries, but in terms of political consequences and implications, it has far more critical consequences. It has really given very serious political blow to this. At the same time, why I am encouraged at this time is that despite the presidential announcement, many leaders in this country, the governors of a big state like California, Oregon, Washington, and even Massachusetts, I think more than a dozen of states have declared that they will go. More than 200 cities, mayors, they have stated they are continuing their commitment. And again, encouragingly, many CEOs of big business communities like Facebook, Google, General Electric, they are continuing their commitment. The what is known as "we are still in movement." It comprises accounts for $6.3 trillion when we combine all their productivities. Therefore, we really need to have more and more and stronger solidarity. I think again at this time of difficulty, the civil society leaders can also do something. They can raise their voices to their senators and representatives.
Ground
and,
level, you mean?
Yes, yeah. Ground level support. This is what we expect.
Mm. How does one become the Secretary General of the UN? Is it kind of like there's election involved, right? You have to, is it like running for president in kind of sort of a way? You got to get votes, right?
Of course, the Secretary General is elected by votes of member states. But it's much more different from a national election.
Yeah.
For example, national election is more, I think, simpler.
Really?
Simpler than in terms of ballot counting or getting support of the popular votes. This is very complicated process. It requires all five veto power countries' consent. Then it has to be based on the unanimity normally. The Secretary General should not be elected by any divided votes because he or she once become Secretary General, should represent the whole international community. That's a difference between national elections right. and United Nations Secretary General. National election, most of them can be elected 50% plus one. Mm-hmm. Or there are some countries even without going to final votes. Mm-hmm. So they can be elected even 40% of support as a president or prime ministers.
So in some ways it's harder.
In a sense, much more complicated, yeah. takes a longer time,
yeah.
and it requires a full support of 193 member states. Chairman or CEO of any business firm can be elected by majority of board members.
You've got to be a really popular guy to get elected as Secretary General.
Well, I should be one of... one of many Secretaries General. I'm the eighth Secretary General,
right.
but I was re-elected two times by unanimity.
Talk about your career, and you've also observed, you've served in the Foreign Service in South Korea, so you've observed foreign policy and international affairs for many decades now. Mm-hmm. Does the UN need reform? A lot of people, a lot of critics say, well, the UN reflects the balance of power from the 1940s, you know, the permanent five, but now with countries like, powerful countries like Germany, like powerful countries like India, like Brazil, they don't have a seat at the table in the same way that the major powers do from the 1940s. Do you see that needing updating? I mean, they still speak French, for instance, at the UN, half in English, half in French. Mm-hmm. It seems a little outdated.
That has been one of the most serious concerns raised by member states and international community as a whole, that United Nations, particularly Security Council, should be reformed in a more representative and more transparent and accountable manner. I think there is no objection. There is almost consensus views among member states. But how to elect the permanent members, how to represent...
Everybody wants change, but nobody knows how to make it.
Yeah, so that's a huge, hugely complicated issue because many countries, they bring their own formulas, which has not been supported by the majority of the member states. And that's a problem. That's why during last longer than 20 years, they have been discussing this matter, but have not been able to reach any... a single formula.
Yeah. And do you see that something that could take place in the next 20 or 30 years, or is that something that will be difficult to make happen?
It's a matter of political will. If there is a political will among the so-called P5 permanent members of the Security Council, I think they can...
could happen.
Can happen, this one. But I suspect that there are still a difference of positions, even though... no country has publicly spoken out that they are real, real intentions, but it's clear that they have not been united on this issue.
Well, since you've stepped down as Secretary General, you probably have a lot more time right now. Mm-hmm. Do you have any favorite hobbies that you like to do in your spare time now that you've got some?
I expected that I should be freer than I was as Secretary General. Of course. Being here with the Harvard community, I'm free from all these daily tensions and responsibilities.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I have been quite busy in making speeches and meeting professors and particularly meeting with students who have been bringing me all good questions for their future or for their thesis.
So you don't have time for hobbies?
I have not found much time even, you know, outside of my job as a Secretary General. But when I return to Korea, I think I will, I hope I will be able to have more time for my own.
Yeah.
During last 10 years, frankly speaking, I have not been able to think about my hobby when there are so many crises happening all at one time. The poverty issues and other peace issues, just simply, it has not been possible. Now that I'm not in the official position, but I will do much more in fostering the global visions of citizens, particularly young people, mm-hmm. so that by the time they reach a certain age as well as a mm-hmm. certain stage, when they have the opportunity to lead the country or this world, then they should be much more global-minded.
Yeah. Yeah. So you've lived in Cambridge for the last few months, couple months. You got any favorite foods that you've been having while you've been here?
Of course, when I'm here in New England, New England clam chowder.
New England clam chowder. Where's the best place in Cambridge to get New England clam chowder?
I have been visiting, well, I should be very careful about this, Legal Seafood.
Oh, yeah.
And Harvest.
Oh, Harvest is great.
Yes, Harvest is also great.
It's a wonderful place. Yeah. And you like their, you like their clam chowder. That's your favorite
That's
dish?
That's one of my favorites all the times.
Do you put the oyster crackers
normally
in?
Normally, I start with the clam chowder.
And that's how you start your meals?
Or oysters, yeah.
Oh, you like oysters,
yes,
too?
Yes, yes.
Do you have a favorite way of eating your oysters?
Raw.
Straight? No, no lemon juice? No, salt sauce?
Of course, some lemon juice, some sauces. Yeah.
Is that, you know, when you've traveled so many places as Secretary General and definitely as certainly as Foreign Minister of South Korea, was food something that you, was that a perk of the job? Do you look forward to trying the various foods at different places?
I have had no problem as far as time zone or jet lag or food is concerned. So I've been thinking that I'm a cosmopolitan person. So that's quite fortunate. I have seen so many of my staff, including my wife, who have had the difficulty in sleeping because of jet lag. Fortunately, I have not felt anything. Even now, I'm okay. And I have had no troubles with food, local food. So that's one good...
You got a strong stomach.
Strong stomach and a good criteria to become a Secretary General.
Oh, is that right?
Of the United Nations.
You got to have a strong stomach. You got to have an iron stomach
to
be Secretary General.
I have a good health conditions.
Great. Yeah. Well, Secretary General Bond, thank you so much for being with us on the show. I've had an absolutely great time. Appreciate your time. Thank you so much. So
thank you for this opportunity. Let's work together. Mm-hmm. To make this world better, media can play a very important role.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Office Hours was produced by the Belfer Center for Science and International Affairs at Harvard's Kennedy School of Government.